inside. As they barreled through the door, Ree crashed into someone. She reared back and then stifled a gasp. It was the Royal Guard. Her Royal Guard. She couldn't tear her eyes off the stunners on their belts. The broad-chested man she'd bumped into wiped the spot on his khaki uniform where they'd touched, making a big show of being disgusted. The mark on Ree's face felt as if it were on fire. The other guard stood there, smiling. She noticed for the first time how cocky they seemed, like they owned every place they cared to set foot on. Had they been like that even under her charge? Under her father's charge? Dalin had gone perfectly still, and Ree felt a pressure inside her mounting.
"Apologies," she said in a terrible Fontesian accent, then bowed out of nervousness, realizing too late that bowing was reserved for diplomats and ties.
The taller Tassin got a good laugh. He took a step forward to block the threshold, standing so close that Ree had to tilt her head all the way back to see his face. A long chin and a sloped nose. He looked like a jackal. She suppressed the urge to bare her teeth. What were they even doing here, outside of collusion territory? Ree felt Dalin's hand squeeze her shoulder protectively. She swatted it off.
"Don't I get a bow, too?"
the taller Tassin asked in his crisp, capital accent, the one Ty Rayana had preferred she spoke with. Ree balled her fists at her side. Suddenly, she remembered Julian flicking his hair out of his face, explaining how diamonds form under high temperature and pressure. How did beings in the Outer Belt deal with organic memories like this, flooding your brain without warning, at the worst possible moments? She'd come all this way to find out the truth about her family. It wouldn't end here, at the mercy of two arrogant men heady with the tiniest bit of power. Ree couldn't be caught, couldn't afford to have their cube scammed. And so, she bowed. It was a beat too late, though, and they must have noticed. The big-chested one hooked his thumb in his belt.
"Where are you two headed?"
"Now, Fruma."
She felt Dalin stiffen. Too late, she realized she should have named somewhere on Fontis instead. She hadn't known why she said it, only that it was the first place that had formed on her tongue. It was home.
"The moon? I didn't know there were convents for the marked there."
"There are likely a number of things you don't know," Ree mumbled.
"What did you say?"
he demanded. He tried to push her hood back, but Ree dodged out of his reach.
"That there are a number of things to see if you go," she said, with a simpering smile.
The taller Tassin to the right laughed.
"It's best you didn't touch her," he said to his partner. "Marked and a Fontesian. If the little thing's not covered in germs, then she's certainly got the worst luck I've ever seen."
"Probably right," the round one said. He eyed Dalin.
"You don't talk much."
"Afternoon, sirs," Dalin said, lowering his head.
He was a looming presence at Ree's back, but his voice remained passive.
"Sirs, I like that. This one's got the right idea."
The taller one nodded.
"Perhaps you could teach this one a thing or two about manners."
As if she needed a lesson in manners. Her guards had acted as shadows in the quiet palace of Naufruma, receding into the background when she became focused on history lessons or lost herself in play. They rotated in and out, so she never became acquainted with one for long. Though they hadn't seemed interested, standing like sentries at doorways, their faces neutral whenever she passed. Ree wondered now if they'd been instructed to do that, and where their instructions came from today.
Siotra's council? Ree's ears popped again. With a clap like a lightning bolt, they emerged from the atmospheric pressure patch. People sighed happily and even cheered. The Tassin looked relieved, too. But Ree felt panic moving down her body like sweat. The doors behind them opened with a hiss, and now the mechanical voices of both ticket collectors crested in unison like a shout.
Please provide your ticket information before proceeding. Please provide your ticket information before proceeding.
With no options left, Ree broke into a run. She tried to push past the Tassin, but a blow to her chest knocked her off her feet and drove the breath straight out of her lungs. Stars exploded in her head. Dimly, she could hear Dalin shouting and the droids announcing trouble. When she could finally take a breath, the oxygen shocked her into awareness again. The taller Tassin had hit her with one of the steel batons the royal guards always carried.
"Jumpers," the guard said. "I'd bet Kalu on it."
By the way he smiled, Ree could tell he'd been baiting them, that he'd known this whole time. Turning to the droids, he gave them a dismissive flick of his wrist.
"Leave. We'll handle it from here."
"Want me to get a read on them?"
The big-chested man stepped forward, and Ree saw he was holding a cube reader. Time slowed. He was Vayron's build, and Ree grasped for organic memories of her trainer. Of all the sparring sessions she'd had with him over the past year, every recollection was a pin shoved through her beating heart, but she pushed the pain aside, calculating all the ways she could break this man's arm should he try to access her cube. Assuming Dalin didn't kill him first. She tried to climb to her feet, but the taller Tassin pinned her again with the end of his baton.
"Don't bother," he said,
with a pinched expression of someone confronting a particularly disgusting piece of garbage.
"Like you said, these two probably carry diseases. Throw 'em straight into the pen instead."
Chapter 14. Alyosha. Ali was on his way to Portis because it was what Vin had wanted them to do, and because he had nowhere else to go. He thought of this one time he, Jeff, and Vin had been on leave there. They had spent their last night staying up way too late and drinking in Jeff's backyard, talking about nothing and everything, about the things they'd do, the places they'd see, how none of them were going to be anything like their fathers. They were due back to duty the next day, and they nearly fell asleep in formation, they were so damn tired. Sergeant Vedku made them clean the squad bay for half a day, scrubbing floors that were already spotless, thinking that maybe they'd die on their hands and knees with a wash rag as their only witness.
"Worth it," Vin had said.
Vin never had any regrets, never let anything stop him. What was that expression? For the kind of guy who went big? He knows how to live. And now, Vin was dead, while Ali hid out in the cargo hold of an interquadrant Zeppelin. It was as terrible as it sounded. Hours trying to spot your own hands in the dark, a crinkly tarp on the cold ground for a bed, storage containers as bathrooms, placed all over like he had to mark his territory. But the worst part? Having all the time to think, to wonder a million times over why he was the one who'd survived. Ali had never killed anyone before, and he'd thought that if it came down to it, it would be in a face-off against an enemy on the battlefield. Instead, Ali had killed his best friend to get a stupid apology he didn't even deserve. The crash on Nydaz had left him weak. Sometimes, when he started to fall asleep, he felt himself tumbling toward icy dark water again, and woke up with a start. Pavel had a surprisingly effective floating mechanism, but Ali had had to drag Vin to the surface. By then he wasn't moving on his own, but his eyebrows remained arched in surprise. Like maybe even in death he was thinking, "For real?" Pavel had helped him bury Vin, there on that cold, rocky planet. Ali had left the hammer on his chest. Now, metal wire sparked at Ali's fingertips as he tried to rig the door open. He dropped it with a curse and looked at his throbbing hand. It wasn't the first time he'd electrocuted himself learning the system. His fingers were cold, clumsy. Distractions weren't helping him any either.
Stop thinking about Vin. "Soldering iron,"
Ali whispered to Pavel, who wordlessly passed him an attachment shaped like a stylus.
You couldn't get the system open without a barcode. So, this was Allie's only option. After a few more adjustments, the door slid open. The sound of compressed air had never been so sweet. The light bulb outside in the hall was unscrewed, just as he'd left it, which meant he would be invisible. He counted off a few seconds, enough so that anyone watching or listening would assume he'd slipped out into the hallway. Then, moved into a crouch again. Time to catch the Chartois who'd been stealing from him. After the crash, Allie had walked for a whole day to the nearest town, where he stole a pod outside an oxygen bar and booked it to the neighboring planet of Fana. He felt bad about the pod, but he had to get the hell out of the collusion territories fast. Besides, he was sure it would be recovered practically as soon as he ditched it. Then the Hollows would be on fire with all the Revolutionary Boys' conspiracy theories. If and when they found Vincent's body, Allie would be on the hook for another murder. From Fana, he'd hitched a ride on a freighter headed for the Outer Belt. With a stolen ID, a headscarf, and a fake Charum accent, Allie had managed to sneak on board alongside thousands of refugees fleeing Kalu's newly declared military zones. Code for places that would get wiped as soon as they started dropping M-stones that rendered anything that ran on electricity useless. He was a refugee, twice over. At least during the forced evac of Rayta, he hadn't been alone. Even as they'd walked for 7 days to the nearest port, there were entire families alongside them. Babies they all took turns holding, other kids to make up games with. It had been the most arid season in decades during that exodus. They'd arrive at each stop covered in a layer of dust so thick, people joked they couldn't be told apart. It's why they'd called them Dusties. Now Allie had nowhere to go and no one to walk beside him. He thought about calling Jeff, but if he powered on his cube, he might as well surrender. Half the Kalu army would be on both of them like white on rice. A part of him wanted to hustle to a far-off planet and just disappear. But Vincent's voice kept coming back to him. "But if one of us doesn't make it," he'd yelled as they burned through the atmosphere. His dying wish was for Allie to go to the United Planets. He'd been sure that they would help. Then again, he'd also believed Princess Jocelyn might still be alive, so he was probably out of his mind. Still, with no money, no plan, and no other options, Allie was headed to Portus to find Vin's contact. Allie had no idea how he was supposed to find Lancer, or where he would even start, but he'd have to figure it out on the fly. It had been almost a week since the Elidio exploded, though he'd been hoping that Princess Rhiannon might resurface at any point, miraculously alive. He'd had daydreams of official pardons, of receiving an apology from the Regent himself, and the drone vision producers of that damned awful show. But if Rhiannon Ta'an were alive, she would have showed up at the party by now, if only to fend off the war that with every day looked more inevitable. Now, they'd been holed up in cargo for a whole day. It was always pitch black. So much darkness it was like a physical force, a mouth ready to swallow him. But he knew his way around well enough. There were a lot of broken machines that looked like old medical equipment that would probably sell for scrap on the Outer Belt. He'd taken some apart to distract himself, without tools, unscrewing bolts for hours until his fingers bled. He'd managed to sneak some food off the service cart between shift changes once, when it was parked for 5 minutes, unmanned, just outside of the cargo hold. A small window of time, but enough to stuff his pockets with meal pills, fancy dehydrated nuts and fruit, and a bottle of water. It wasn't much, barely enough to survive on, in fact, which was exactly why he'd figured out someone else was stealing, too. Stealing from Allie this time. He'd thought he was alone with Pavel, and the lady who made the annoying announcements about approaching solar wind and cubes going offline. and she wasn't even a lady so much as a digitized voice that sounded vaguely feminine. No, there was someone else in the cargo hold with him. Last night, when he'd left his stash out, they'd lifted a portion of it. He wasn't risking everything just to feed some stranger. He still had another 10 days before the loop hit the Herald Quadrant, where Portis was. As big as he was, Allie was decent at staying quiet. Geared up in camo, a slow advance crawling across terrain on his belly. That had been his idea of a good time when he was in boot camp. He didn't have to wait long before he saw a figure, a silhouette moving toward his camp, weaving around the crates and the old pieces of equipment. He hoped to God the guy didn't have a weapon on him. He held his breath. Just a little closer. A little closer. When he was in striking distance, Allie launched to his feet, grabbed a handful of the guy's jacket, and threw him up against the wall. "You little tahis," he said, covering the kid's mouth. "Don't even think about yelling. If some poor conductor comes running, it'll be the end of both of us." The kid struggled, swatting at Allie's hands. Whatever excuse the little punk was trying to make came out in a muffled plea. Finally, he calmed down. "I'm going to take my hand away, and if you..." "Gah!" Allie yelled out in pain, pulling his hand back. The kid had sunk his teeth into the pinky edge of Allie's hand. "Don't threaten me," the voice said. A little soft and a little high. A girl. He stumbled back, releasing her. He almost felt bad. Almost. His hand stung where she'd bit him. "Or what?" he asked, his anger still sparking. He heard Pavel approaching. "Light, Pavel." Pavel flipped his beam on just as Allie yanked the scarf off the girl's head. She flinched and put her hand up to block her face. "You got another setting on that thing?" she asked Pavel. "Apologies, dimming by 40%, Pavel said as the light softened. "Is this acceptable?" She dropped her hand. "Yes, thank you." "Turn it up, P." Allie didn't want her to see his face. His headscarf was tangled up somewhere with his belongings. And if she knew she was talking to the most wanted criminal in the universe, he doubted she could keep her from screaming. "And don't apologize either. She's fine." Pavel let out what sounded suspiciously like a sigh. Damn learning technology. But the light intensified again. She had long black hair and bangs that covered her eyes. The girl pawed her hair away from her face like she'd read his mind. She was kind of a mess, in the way that pretty girls looked messy, like she'd just washed up from the ocean, raw. Open up a clamshell and there she'd be. She had dark gray eyes and sharp features, but her skin was tan and her cheeks were broad. It gave her a mixed look, maybe a blend of native and second-wave collusion blood. She was swimming in an expensive-looking jacket, two rows of buttons down the front, like the kind he'd seen diplomats wearing on the Hollows. It obviously wasn't hers. "If you're willing to live with the guilt of burning my retinas off, then that's on you." She had a full mouth pulled into a straight line, like she was born to argue. "A thief trying to lecture me on manners?" "Says the guy who was stealing to begin with." She jerked a thumb toward the service cart. "This piece of work. Ballsy as hell. Turns out, when she wasn't biting people, she was running her mouth." "You owe me," he said. "I've got nothing to give." But Allie saw her bring a hand to one pocket and skim it, as if for reassurance. A tell. It was the same way folks gave themselves away in the Ray, absent-mindedly tapping the pockets where all their important stuff was.
"Then what's in your pocket?"
"I said I have nothing to give," she repeated. "And anyway, what would you want with a rusty old coin?" She held it out in the palm of her hand, and when he reached for it, she grabbed his wrist and pulled him into the light. Allie froze, but it was too late. He'd been recognized. "You," she whispered. She dropped his wrist and pushed him away. But she didn't run or scream out like he thought she would. Instead, she pressed herself against the wall, so he backed up to give her some room. Her expression, the way her mouth parted, her eyes squinting like her brain was locking into the aha moment this very second, it reminded him of someone he knew. He just couldn't think who.
"Kill the light, P," he said quickly. And Pavel did. They'd plunged from bright light to total darkness. "I'm not gonna hurt you," he told her. "Don't be scared."
"Who says I'm scared?"
She didn't sound too confident, but she wasn't screaming her head off either.
"Maybe you should be scared."
"I am," he said honestly. "For a lot of reasons. That it would all end here, that Vincent had died for nothing, that the Ta'an had been wiped out and the planets would go to war."
"It really is you," she said. "I can't believe it. You're Alyosha from the Revolutionary Boys."
Then,
"Where's the other one? Where's Vincent?"
"Dead," Allie said shortly. Maybe Allie was a murderer. Anyone who rolled with him ended up dead. "I buried him." Allie could feel the back of his throat closing off, his eyes watering, a deep blue filling up his chest. She was quiet for a bit.
"They said you kidnapped him."
"Is that what you think?" he asked bitterly. "That I'm a murderer? Some sort of terrorist?"
"Is that what you are?" she replied evenly.
Allie couldn't read her tone.
"It's what everyone believes, isn't it?"
Even if she couldn't see him, he could still feel her eyes searching his face. It reminded him of the first time they'd brought a camera on board the Revolutionary, and how he didn't know what to do with his hands.
"If all we are is what people think we are, then we're all screwed."
There was a knife's edge to her voice. She sounded pissed, or scared, or both.
"Well, we're all screwed anyway," Allie said.
But her words bothered him. He knew as well as anyone that it was other people's rules that mattered. In the real world, they told you who to be, not the other way around. It's why he pretended to be collusion when he first joined the Uniforce. It just made life easier.
"You're crazy, you know that?" Allie told her. "I could be dangerous."
"Let's say I am crazy and you are dangerous, and we call it a draw."
"Besides," she added, "you haven't hurt me yet, and you could have. That's a gold star in my book."
"That's a pretty low bar," Allie said.
Just then, there was a faint hiss as the doors opened at the northern end of the hold. Allie snapped back to the present just as the beam of a flashlight shifted across the floor. The girl grabbed his wrist and pulled him down to crouch behind what looked like an old MRI machine nearby. Pavel had enough sense to go still and keep his lights dark. No one had come in here for a full 24 hours.
"Entering carriage 95, a man said, speaking into his cube.
Allie poked his head up and saw he was wearing the uniform of a Ta'an.
He couldn't believe it. The Ta'an were showing up more and more now, in places they weren't meant to be, like under Katz, and now here on the Zeppelin.
He'd been worried a droid would find them, but this was way worse. As the girl yanked him back down, he accidentally nudged a piece of equipment. It made a sound as it scratched across the floor.
"Who's there?"
the man called out. Allie's body tensed, and for whatever reason, he and the girl reached for each other at the same time.
Could he trust her?
She'd grabbed him to hide, hadn't she? They were so close, her tangled hair had somehow made it into his mouth.
Thank God she didn't smell like fake flowers or extinct fruits, or else he'd be sneezing his face off.
Her head just smelled like a head.
Could she hear his heart beating?
Her breath was hot on his neck. The guard's footsteps came closer. Allie had slung one arm protectively around her and wished to God he still had his hammer. He scanned the floor for anything he could use.
What were they going to do?
Crouch here spooning each other until the guard found them? Because at this rate, he would find them.
Crunch.
Allie heard the Ta'an curse softly as something crackled underfoot. Allie's blood froze,
He'd left his supplies out, just scattered across the blanket for anyone to see, hoping to tempt the thief, the girl, into revealing herself. He heard the rustle of fabric as the Tassin moved into a crouch, saw the beam of light sweep across a sad collection of spare parts he'd stripped from the machines. The guard was less than 5 feet away, separated from them by only a thin arrangement of extra sheet metal. They would have to fight. There was no other choice. Slowly, as quietly as he could, he crept forward. Then, suddenly the guard touched his cube. "Hold on, 401. Let me transfer you to a hollow." He pulled a small handheld hollow from his pocket. "Go ahead, 401. The device projected a hologram of another guard wearing the same army outfit with a red sash. "They've found the freight jumper. Male, 6 foot, medium build, a Vaud head. Crazy tattoos and all. Traveling with a marked girl." "I'm in cargo," he said, poking through Allie's stuff with the tip of his baton. "Looks like they've been living down here, too." "Leave it. We're landing in 15, and we'll need all hands on deck. Just heard Nero's skipping town early, and he's got a whole party with him." "Yeah, there were about 9 million staff requests to be put on his security detail. Everyone is trying to meet him." The Tassin stood up and retreated, moving back through the cargo the way he'd come. Allie didn't realize he'd stopped breathing until the hiss of the mechanized doors told him he was safe. Didn't realize either how tightly he'd been holding the girl until she moved away from him. "Whoa," the girl muttered. She stood up, and Allie did too. Pavel lit up tentatively, as if afraid to fully power on, so she was cast in a low blue light. "They'll be back," he said. He'd have to disembark earlier than he wanted and find some other way to Portus. He asked himself for the 1,000th time what Vin had expected him to do with his crappy half-information about a maybe-lost princess and some random contact in the United Planets. And again, he couldn't stay on the Zeppelin, especially if Nero was sharing his airspace. Since his cube was off, Allie'd been missing most of the news. He wasn't at all interested in seeing a murderer or wanted label slapped over a bad picture of his face. But he'd picked up that Regent Siotra had up and disappeared. "Vanished," the hollow said. More like assassinated, Allie figured. Now Nero was practically in charge, making a big show about how collusions, the good guys they were, had tried diplomacy. Now it was time to take action. "Take back what's ours," had become the rallying cry of Nero's rabid supporters. It was a veiled call for blood. Allie's blood specifically, as well as the blood of anyone who had supported Fontesian or Raetian calls for peace. Allie guessed people were fed up and didn't need a whole lot of convincing. All Nero had to do was just remind them how horrible their lives were and point a finger on the sly. See who they blamed, then. It helped Nero's case that he looked the way he did. A jaw that cut glass, a slick-looking haircut, a permanent smile on his face that made people go weak in the knees. Allie had felt off that time Nero invited him and Vin to the gala. He was easygoing and seemed to take a liking to Vin. They were both second-wave collusions, and Nero could have been his cool younger uncle. Nero was nice enough to Allie, too, and introduced him with the minimal level of pleasantries. But there was something about the way his eyes flickered over him, like Allie was a roach in a tux. When Allie brought it up to Vin, he said what he always did. "It's in your head." Apparently, not. "I gotta keep moving," the girl said. She stared at him for a long time. Her gray-blue eyes were intense, like the choppy parts of the ocean where you weren't supposed to swim. But he willed himself not to look away. He realized she was half asking for permission and half trying to say goodbye. "Don't worry, I won't tell anyone about you." Allie nodded. What else could he do? He wasn't going to hold her against her will. He wasn't going to become the monster that Nero and his council were trying to claim he was. As the girl passed Pavel, she touched the top of his dome. His blue eyelights blinked softly.
Maybe he was surprised by the gesture, too. When she got far enough away, she turned, breaking into a sprint as she wove her way toward the same door that Tassin had used. She stopped suddenly before she reached it.
"Where will you go?"
she asked.
"To find help."
She spun around to face him then, and for a split second, Allie thought she might charge him. But instead, she blurted out,
"Do you want to come with me?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
he asked instead.
"Why trust me?"
"I don't," she shrugged. "But if you're still alive when half the universe wants you dead, you can't be an idiot. And there's safety in numbers."
"Not when one of us is plastered all over the hollows," Allie said. "Besides, he wouldn't be anyone's charity case."
"I'm going to a safe house," she said finally. "There's one on Resto."
"A safe house? On Resto? Was everyone in the galaxy some kind of spy? But that whole place is poisonous."
Resto was a small moon and the site of a nuclear plant before the Great War, but it had a meltdown when Fontis bombed it. Anyone who hadn't died had abandoned it. Supposedly, the radiation would last in the soil for something like 20,000 years.
"Nothing radiation pills can't fix," she spoke matter-of-factly.
And he wondered if she was being serious, or if she had a sense of humor to rival Jeth's. Why the hell would she help him?
"It's still not as toxic as staying in Kalu," she frowned.
And he waited her out, banking on the fact she'd say more eventually. Thankfully, it worked.
"It's my mom, okay? She's a scientist and was part of the G1K summits. A bunch of them have been targeted, hunted down. But they're smart, obviously, and they organize themselves. This safe house is theirs. And they set up a massive universe-wide broadcast to beam a do-not-enter signal across all the hollows. They have to manually disable it every day. If there was trouble, we would know."
By then, Allie's heart had started beating very fast. An idea flashed in his brain like a starburst.
"You said they can broadcast out?"
She nodded. Resto was one of the collusion moons, the other one being now Fruma. For an hour a day, the two crossed orbits. It blocked any drone vision broadcasts. For the first time in days, some of the bleak grip of hopelessness eased. He'd had no idea Resto had its own tower, or capabilities to broadcast out. If the planet could send that kind of distress call, then it could send out his cube playback, easy, for the whole universe to see. He'd broadcast his own versions of events. He'd show them, once and for all, that he didn't kill the princess. And maybe, then they'd stop chasing him. Allie could finally stop running. Vin had told him to go to Portis, which was all the way in the Herald Quadrant, and nearly a week's ride away, and ask for the United Planets' help. But this was the immediate solution, and exactly what he needed to prove his innocence. He'd still see his promise through to Vin, but he'd do it afterward. There was a dinging service announcement. The girl did that thing where she looked up, like the voice had come out of the sky. But Allie somehow got fixated on the tan skin on her neck, the way her shirt fell just so, and had to look away. He couldn't let himself be distracted.
"Arriving in Navrum, this Zeppelin will be making stops in the Bezoral and Desuco quadrants," the captain announced, then repeated the message again in Fontesian, Raetan, and Derkatsian. That meant, Allie knew, that the freighter must cut a path directly through Resto's orbit.
"Okay," he said. "I'm coming with you."
Allie still didn't totally understand why she was helping him, but getting to the safe house in Resto felt like the most solid plan he'd had in days. But then it occurred to him. Navrum City is at the edge of the Raelia Quadrant. Resto isn't a scheduled stop. How the hell are you planning to get off this thing mid-orbit? She raised an eyebrow.
"You hitched a ride on a Zeppelin," she said. "But have you ever hitched a ride off?"
Chapter 15. Rhiannon.
Re and Dalin had been herded into a holding area by the two Tassin who caught them. And now, they stood among dozens of other loop jumpers waiting to be kicked off at the next stop. Fortunately, the next stop was exactly where Re wanted to go. Descending onto Navram shortly. Please, fasten your seatbelt and ensure all belongings are secured, the overhead recording announced. The Zeppelin shuddered as it burned through the atmosphere. Re was hemmed in too tightly to lose her balance. She'd never believed in luck, but this was almost enough to convince her. It was her plan all along to sneak off onto this very planet, where Nero was meeting with governments of collusion allies and broadcasting interviews. She'd seen on the public hollows how Kalu was being edged into war now that everyone believed her dead. Re desperately needed to reach Nero, to use his platform and fame, so she could reveal herself alive on his broadcast. Now that Re knew of Siotra's innocence, she could stalk the inner workings of the council and find out who'd really been behind her family's betrayal. It was a risk to expose herself. She knew that. But now was the time to be bold. A sharp, sudden pressure at the base of her spine made her stumble forward into a woman in front of her. "Is that necessary?" she asked, twisting around to glare at one of the Tassin, who only laughed in response. It was the third time a member of the Royal Guard had rammed her with the tip of a metal baton. There were too many people corralled in too small a space, and the Tassin seemed to make a game of it, jabbing them forward at random, using specialized metal prongs to shock the ones who complained. She overheard two guards gossiping about one of their own losing his badge. But apart from that, Re barely understood all the languages and dialects piping up among the prisoners. She didn't need to speak them, though. To pick up the fear and tension in their words, the whole thing made Re sick. Who was commanding them? Who would keep them in line? Her father would have never stood for such cruelty from his own royal guard. A familiar shame snaked around her organs, as if the weight of every responsibility was hers to feel. Was that what being empress meant? And was it honorable to take the throne solely in order to take her revenge? Dalin tried to press closer to her to shield her with his body, but Re pushed him away. He'd betrayed her. As soon as the opportunity arose, she would lose him and find Nero. "Are you all right?" he asked. "I'm fine," she said, without looking at him. He'd killed a man, she reminded herself. Killed him horribly, without mercy, without giving him the chance to defend himself. But would she have acted any better? She refused to feel guilty for lying to Dalin, for misleading him about her plans to abandon him. Not when he had lied to her first and ruined her chances of learning the truth from Siotra.
"Hey, you, Vodhead, no talking."
One of the Tassin reached out and shocked Dalin with a taser, hard. He seized and re-grabbed for him, feeling the jolt that rang through her whole head like biting down on a metal spoon. She recoiled as Dalin collapsed to the ground. The other jumpers shrieked. Her heart shot up through her throat. Re moved to help him, but he pushed her away, as if she were the one who'd electrocuted him. It was all so traumatic that she almost didn't realize she had his ring in her hand. It had slipped off Dalin's finger when she tried to grab him. When their eyes met, he shook his head, and she felt a rush of doubt. His face had hollowed out in the last week since he'd saved her life, and he looked even paler than usual. Before he could stand, he was shocked again by a different guard, a man who'd pushed his way through the crowd, dedicated to enacting this torture. That was twice now and counting. Re suspected they kept choosing Dalin because they knew he wouldn't cry out. She squeezed her hand around his ring and breathed deeply, in and out, focusing only on her next move, on what was coming. Dalin would be slower now, after the electric shocks. Re would simply lose him in the crowd. Easy. Her stomach was coiled tightly, guilt gripping her insides. She'd taken advantage of his torture. The Zeppelin touched down with a jolt. Everyone stumbled together. When the doors slid open, the sunlight stung her eyes, and the loop jumpers began pouring out. Ree leapt down off the Zeppelin, hearing the laughter of the guards at her back, taunting the jumpers and threatening worse punishments if they tried to get a free ride again.
"What's your problem?"
A man's voice, deep and angry, sounded out behind her. Dallin must have accidentally jostled him, because just 2 meters to her right, she saw a big Dirkatsian clutching the front of Dallin's tunic, obviously spoiling for a fight.
"You forget how to use your eyes, buddy."
In the space between one heartbeat and the next, Ree knew. This was her chance.
"You must be fair, but decisive," her father had said.
At that very instant, as Dallin tried to wrench out of the man's grip, his eyes locked onto Ree's. In that moment, she knew he knew. Ree would abandon him. Dallin tried to lunge for her despite the man holding him, but the man yanked him back, and in a split second, she was free. Elbowing her way out, she heard more yelling erupt behind her, but she didn't dare glance back. She was free. Alone. Ree quickly made her way through the other disoriented jumpers who'd been shoved out of the holding car. The glass roof of the hub's freestanding grand pavilion had ribbed arches like that of an ancient cathedral. Her hood fell away as she ran, and Ree quickly yanked it back over her head.
"Wait!"
she heard someone shout. Maybe Dallin, but she kept her head down and pushed forward. Her heart was pounding.
"Honor, loyalty, and bravery," she repeated.
Never mind the questions that came after. Who must she be honorable and loyal to? Who must she be brave for? The central hollow projected a clock high in the pavilion. There were 3 large archways making the hub exits, and various hollows flashing unfamiliar street signs. Advertising specials, news, music. It was a madhouse. Even the central station in Cebu during the Harvest Festival was never this crowded. There must have been 10,000 souls, maybe more, from every corner of the galaxy packed into the hub. The walls were made of glass and metal beams, and a dizzying light from the sun shone through them. Ree knew that Dallin's size wouldn't do him any favors in the crowded terminal. She squeezed through a current of people, like a salvion fish going upstream, dodging a family with 3 slobbering Vitis hounds on leashes. The dogs barreled forward, dragging the children who tried to hold them back.
"It's Nero!"
someone nearby exclaimed, and Ree's body reacted before even her mind could. Stopping so quickly, she nearly fell. Was Nero really here? In the station? The ancestors were on her side. She stood on her tiptoes and had her answer. Had the answer, too, for why the station was so crowded. Nero hustled through the crowd, surrounded by Tassin, so Ree could see him only in glimpses. Broad shoulders, the forward stride, light hair trimmed and slicked back. He'd always seemed so easygoing, a generous smile trained right at the camera. But today, his mouth was set in a grim line as he pushed his way through the crowd. Reporters were practically crawling on top of him as they shouted out questions and jostled to get closer.
"Is Kalu going to war?
Did they confirm there are Uniforce troops on Rata?
Can the Allies renew the accords of the Ernu Treaty without an Empress or Regent to sign?"
Nero must have been overwhelmed. Ree knew the feeling. Still, he carved a path toward the departure platforms. Ree remembered hearing he wasn't to leave for another 3 days. Something must have happened to make him change his plans. Something bad. For once, she was grateful to be less than 20 hands tall. She slipped through the roiling crowd to follow him, finding the smallest gaps like water flowing into sand.
"Any response to the Fontesian Tsar's accusation?"
"Has Rhiannon Ta'an's body been recovered?"
"Nero has no comment,"
a Tassin called out. Strange, seeing as he always had a comment. Nero loved the cameras, and yet he hadn't said a word or so much as looked at the reporters. As he hurried up the steps toward the first-class car of the waiting craft, Ree was again struck by how much older he looked. And while he'd always been confident, he even moved differently, with more precision and command. A line of Tassin closed in after him and blocked the reporters desperate to pass. Ree was caught up in the tide of journalists and pundits and hangers-on as they foamed down toward the very Zeppelin she disembarked, toward a different entrance altogether, reserved for the first-class passengers. There, another Tassin was checking credentials before ushering the journalists, from all over the galaxy, Ree noted, if the pair of long-limbed Nyasil sparring with the squid-like Ottos about who had been first in line were any indication, into the press car. With a handheld scanner, he reviewed ID cards and admitted or rejected them with a nod or shake of his head. Two muscular brutes in the uniforms of Uniforce rookies were on hand to hustle away anyone who didn't pass muster. Ree's mouth was dry. She licked her lips. She had to get back on board this Zeppelin and speak to Nero before it was too late. This Tassin was as tall as he was thick, with cool blue eyes that reminded her of Vayran's. A man you'd go out of your way to avoid. And Ree was prepared to walk straight up to him and plead for her life. She made a split-second decision. She would power up her cube. She would let him scan it. If she had to. Just so she could reach Nero. She wasn't in danger here. Not with Nero so close. They'd had a personal connection all those years ago, and Ree knew he couldn't resist the kind of ratings boost she'd give him. He could announce that Princess Rhiannon lived and stop a war. But before she could step up to the Tassin, one of the Uniforce rookies grabbed the back of her tunic.
Nice try, girlie. His breath was hot and foul. Press only.
Wait! She struggled to free herself from his grip, but his hands were like steel clamps.
Please, you don't understand.
Even as the Uniforce soldier tried to steer her out of the line, however, the Tassin checking credentials looked up and met her eyes. A quick change of expression skated across his face. Had he recognized her? Ree was hopeful and terrified all at once. He lowered his scanner.
Hold on, he said.
His voice, she wasn't surprised, was just like his eyes. All ice.
Bring that one here.
Ree was shoved over to him. For some reason, everyone had quieted. Maybe it was the effect of the Tassin's voice, as if the very air had frozen. The man took one of his long, white fingers and flicked back her hood to better see her face. She looked into his blue eyes and again registered the change in his expression. He did know her. She'd finally be the princess once again. But before she could speak to explain, the Tassin returned his gaze to his scanner and gestured the next journalist forward.
Go on, let her in, he said casually. You sure, boss? Look at her tunic. You really want a Vod head in there?
Ree flinched at the slur. She wasn't Fontesian, but the hate in his voice was meant for her nonetheless. The Uniforce rookie obviously meant that because the tunic she wore was Fontesian, she was Fontesian.
Could be a spy or something.
The Tassin sighed exaggeratedly.
This is why you're paid to shoot and shove things. Do her ears look pointed to you? She isn't Fontesian. Besides, she's marked. Call Fiona and tell her this kid is going in. We'll want the Hollows to get a good shot of her with Nero, and the public will eat it up.
Ree finally understood. She looked dirty and exposed. The vermilion mark burning halfway down her face. She hadn't been recognized. In her excitement to be so close to her announcement, she'd forgotten all about the mark that still disfigured her. But at least the Uniforce guard released her and allowed her to pass through the press entrance. Ree entered and saw that they were being funneled back into the first-class cabin, through an ancillary entrance equipped with subtle weapon detectors. The first-class cabin had been rearranged to look like a press room. There was a raised podium on a velvet dais at one end of the carriage, and the space was already packed. Her cube was offline, and she had no translator to make sense of the dozens of different languages filling the air with a confused chatter. But she picked up bits of conversation here and there. Talk of war, the ongoing manhunt for her supposed killer, the finer points of the Ernu Treaty. She yanked her hood back up and picked her way through the aisle, finding a spot against the back wall. All the chairs were filled and neatly divided into sections, arranged in a semicircle around a podium. She scanned the room, eager to have a private moment with Nero before he spoke to the crowd. But he came in abruptly, aides on either side, and marched straight for the podium. The room went almost immediately quiet. Ree could tell which journalists were recording the press conference through their cubes because of the way their eyes dimmed and went unfocused. A camera droid on wheels rolled forward for a tight shot. Ree would have to wait it out and hope that she could get close to Nero to reveal herself and plan her announcement.
"Thank you, everyone, for your presence at such a crucial time in the history of our planets. We pray to the ancestors that Regent Seotra will be returned to us, safely."
His eyes seemed to flicker in and out of attention as he read prepared comments off his cube. Up close, Nero looked exhausted and overworked, but there was an intensity in his eyes.
"As you may know, I've been vocal about my concerns."
He nodded at several people in the front row, and then at the cameras. Ree only now realized he wasn't in his regular diplomacy uniform, and instead wore a military-style double-breasted blazer that accentuated his broad shoulders.
"I came to see our allies in the hopes that they would help Kalu in defending ourselves."
"You want their help to invade, not defend,"
a collusion woman called out from the back of the room. Heads and cameras swiveled in her direction.
"Part of defending Kalu means taking back what's ours," Nero countered. "Yet the United Planets have repeatedly denied our requests to increase sanctions on Rayta and its allies. They call our pleas to protect ourselves, to protect our borders and our people, hasty."
The woman stepped forward and tried to speak up again, but Nero spoke over her.
"They have dragged their feet, claiming we don't yet have all the information we need."
It was true. Nero didn't have all the information, but he was motivated by grief and fear. Ree knew all too well what that was like. He wanted to send a message, and he wanted justice.
"Don't confuse retaliation with fairness," her mother had said once, gripping Ree and Joss by the ears.
More forgotten memories. Her mother wrenching Joss and Ree apart after they fought over who knows what.
"You don't resort to violence just because you're sad or angry."
Ree wanted to tell Nero that now.
"For too long have we ignored the threat that these savages have posed," Nero continued.
Savages? Ree had never heard him use that kind of language before.
"For too long have our immigration policies been lax. We let a Rayton onto our planet, let him serve in our army and wear our uniform, gave him a place that could have belonged to one of your children instead. And he repays us by killing our princess."
Ree was surprised to hear murmurs of agreement.
"Dusties,"
someone next to her muttered, and she felt a sharp twisting in her stomach. Was there really so much hatred in the universe? So much prejudice, even among people who claimed to be unbiased? Had this always been true? Or had something changed in the week since she was supposedly killed?
"Where are they going?"
Ree remembered asking as a kid when she'd seen footage of the Rayton refugees traveling on the Hollows. It seemed like they'd walked forever, across an entire season when the flowers bloomed and died again. Yet another organic memory she had to shake away.
"They're looking for a new home," Joss had told her.
Ree picked up a stylus and began to draw all the houses they'd build for them on Kalu. At first, Joss's pout got a little bigger, like it did when she got sad and might cry. But then she just said,
"Grow up."
The collusion woman who'd caused the outburst earlier let out a cry, and even though several people looked in her direction, the cameras didn't. She was being dragged out by two Tassin, thrashing and kicking, and no one moved to help her. Not even Ree. She stood perfectly still, shame burning her face, as the woman was taken.
The Rose of the Galaxy is gone, Nero said once the woman had exited, and he had everyone's focus once more. His face looked like it was carved from marble by a master sculptor. He'd never looked more handsome or more ruthless.
As a planet, we should rally together and vow, once and for all, Rheta and any planet foolish enough to back them will pay.
The energy in the car frightened her. It wasn't curious. It was charged, electric, angry.
What's the status on the investigation of Alyosha Miraz? A reporter now called out. Was he receiving directions?
We think it is likely he was reporting to a larger terrorist organization, yes, Nero said, nodding his head.
And his hostage, Vincent, from the Revolutionary Boys?
No word yet. We've been in touch with his family.
Any idea where the fugitive has gone? Someone interrupted.
We've got every Uniforce cruiser from here to the Outer Belt looking for him, and a bounty on his head that will make his captor rich for life. We're confident we'll find him.
A Tonktal, whose camera was built right into the hardware of his exoskeleton, spoke up next.
Have you determined how he fled the scene? I have an anonymous source that says a royal escape pod is unaccounted for.
She straightened up. She'd assumed that the royal escape pod had been lost to the dark folds of the universe. Otherwise, someone would have found Varen's body, and her braid. Someone would know she'd made it out alive. And the question had, in fact, caused a stir. Everyone was whispering, muttering, straining to catch a glimpse of the reporter.
I'm afraid that's untrue, Nero said, and Rhi felt all the air go out of her chest. All the pods were accounted for. The pods were used to ferry off the only survivors, an evacuation effort I and Regent Siotra were involved in.
Nero was lying. Not all the pods were accounted for. The icy feeling spread to her head and built pressure behind her eyes. Tai Rayana had said that Varen must have planted an explosive device in case his attempt on Rhi's life failed. But how had they known to evacuate even before the initial blast? Dallin's ring burned a hole in her pocket. It gave her an uneasy feeling, as if its ability to capture energy meant it would capture the attention of others, too. The world went mute as she looked around the room, really looked for the first time. The press conference claimed itself haphazard and slapdash, but it had obviously been set up well in advance. Nero had never intended to sway the collusion allies. He'd shown up in a military-looking uniform, with every intention to position himself as a leader, one who could rule an entire planet. The kindness he'd shown, the rousing speeches he'd given, it was all an act, made more convincing by his good looks and those intense blue eyes she'd once thought as soulful. Suddenly Rhi understood. It had been all for the cameras. Truly, it was Nero all along, not Siotra, who'd arranged to have her family killed, who'd tried to kill her. He'd plotted in the shadows and pressed for her early coronation so he could have her assassinated. Rhi remembered what Nero had said after her family died, his words of consolation that had stayed with her for so many years. The ancestors saw it was an honorable death, and through them we ensure a new, worthy leader will rise. He'd been speaking of himself. It was Nero, the man who stood at the podium not 10 feet away, the most powerful man in Kalu, who wanted to take their planet to war, who wanted her dead. As if the realization were a literal bolt of lightning that struck at Rhi's feet, Nero turned and looked directly at her. Chapter 16. Alyosha. The name of the game was not to get caught.
Allie's only plan was to lie low, be inconspicuous, and maybe get to Resto in one piece. Kara, that was the girl's